All right, welcome everybody. This is so exciting. Oh my gosh. This is historic. This is the first time, I believe, since COVID that we've been together.
Yeah.
It's very sweet. It really, really is. I'm so happy. I don't know if this is going to continue because I think a lot of people do prefer it on Zoom. But we got this one in. And I'm really, really happy. I put this on my calendar when we first started the adult classes again back in September. I said, we have to be here for time. So I'm really, really happy that you all can make it. I'm glad that we have our friends here who are in a different city who can't necessarily make it, but they're here with us on Zoom. So here's what I'd like to do for this evening. I want to do two parts. Number one, I want to learn something that I can almost guarantee no one's ever heard before. Something very different about Hanukkah. And then we'll have a little Hanukkah with treats. We should have treats first. That's the truth. I have plenty of treats, whether it's the Hanukkah gelt or the emoji gelt, or somebody's really into their dreidel.
Oh,
wow.
That's fun.
I'm
gonna have to bring my dreidel.
Like the song.
I don't know, it's expensive. It takes some gelt. You might pass it around. Good sports. There you go. Well done. Okay. And then the game itself, believe it or not, is a trivia game. Okay. This is a wheel that has six topics. There's a button at the bottom to turn it off.
Can you mute them, please?
Yeah. Can you mute them on Zoom? Thanks. Right. So there's six topics. It says Hanukkah trivia, Jewish customs, State of Israel, Jewish history, Torah trivia, and Stump the Rabbi. There are six. And what you'll do is you'll each get a turn and you'll spin the wheel. And I will give you, this one says Hanukkah trivia, and I will give you a trivia question. And if you get it right, you get a ball. And if you get enough points, you get a prize at the end. The one that says Stump the Rabbi, by the way, says times two. So if you stump me with a question, you get double points. Oh, wow. Something to think about. All right. You got to think of some really good questions if you get a stump the rabbi. And we'll have our TV contestants will also play along. Play along at home. Send your self-addressed stuffed envelope. Dude, it's on Hollywood, California. 00100, whatever it is. Okay. So here's the thought. It's very different. We know that one of the things that the Greeks, we all know the basic storyline of Hanukkah, and that is the Greeks had already taken over the area in terms of the Middle East, and it really was a larger scale invasion, not just in the Middle East, but an attempt all around the world. And they came to Israel, what we call Israel today, Jerusalem in particular, and they came in and they defiled the temple. They didn't destroy it. They defiled it. One of their main goals, what is it that they wanted from us? You see, if you would ask me the story of Purim, it's very simple. The story of Purim was where King Ahasuerus and his prime minister Haman, they wanted to annihilate us physically. Get rid of the Jews. You can use a more modern day story, Hitler. That's what it is. A destruction of the entire race, the entire people, the Jewish nation, man, women, and child. So it's easy to talk about Purim because the threat was very clear. But what did the Greeks want from us? They didn't want to kill us. No decree about any kind of annihilation for us. But Michelle?
They wanted to assimilate us. They wanted us to become liberated.
Right. They wanted us to give up our Jewishness.
Just to convert.
Give up our Jewishness. That's really what was at stake here. It wasn't a physical threat. It was a spiritual threat. We disagreed theologically. Ideology was at conflict here. And there's many different takes on it. But here's what's interesting. one of the most important aspects, what the Greeks did when they made decrees, right? They, in order to break us from our faith, from our religion, you have to make decrees. So, for example, the famous story about the dreidel. Why is it that we play dreidel? So legend has it that they would want to get together to learn Torah. But it was against the law. You couldn't have public gatherings. This would be illegal.
Questions.
But this would be illegal in the time of the story of Hanukkah. You can't have public gatherings for learning Torah. So we weren't going to give it up. So what we did is we came up with a game. And it was basically, if we heard, we posted someone at the door. If we saw a Greek coming, whatever, quickly pull out your tops, pull out your dreidels, and spin it. And we were just gathering to play and fun. But we know that obviously there's more to it. And I remember at some point, I know years ago, probably should do it again, talk about what the hidden message of the dreidel is. We talked about it once, but
why is it?
Be that as it may. Can you hear me okay over there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So even in the prayer, the prayer we add into our Shmona Esrei, into our Amidah, the Al HaNisim prayer, the wording that's used is very precise. When it talks about the Greeks coming and trying to do what? It says, Lahashkicham Torasecha. In order for the attempt was for us to forget your Torah, God. To forget our Torah. It wasn't a physical annihilation. It was assimilation. It was to break down any kind of barrier between Jew and non-Jew. They said, let's all be the same. Now, again, you've heard me speak many, many times. I have no issues with non-Jews, but I'm Jewish. And there are distinctions. I'm not just a non-Jew who is practicing Judaism. It's Jewish. There's a certain aspect. There are differences between us. And we have, I know it is difficult sometimes in the world in which we live, where it's all about diversity. It's all about, we're all together. I'm all for that. But the minute we break down and say there are no barriers, we're all exactly the same, we are doing a tremendous disservice. We're not. We're not exactly the same. I know it sounds harsh in today's world, but it is true. We're not all exactly the same. People say we're all in the same boat. Well, yes and no. It happens to be some people are sitting in the front, some people are sitting in the middle, and some people are sitting in the back. But it's not exactly the same. And it's not a I don't mean this in a negative way. But we as Jews have to understand that when it says that we're the chosen nation, it does not give us license. It does not give us the right to lord this over everyone else. That's not what it means. When it says that we are chosen, it means we're chosen for a mission, and that means we have greater responsibilities. Is there a difference between a private first-class soldier and a 4-star or 5-star general? They're both soldiers in the army. So yes, if you want to look at it that way, yes, we're all exactly the same. But that's not true. The private first class is a certain level, and the 5-star general is a different level. Does that make the 5-star general better?
No.
No, it doesn't. It does not make him better. What it does is it gives him greater responsibilities. His actions have repercussions that affect the entire, not just the group, not just the battalion, it could affect the entire army. That's what it means that we're chosen. We were chosen for a mission to teach the world about ethics, about values, about right and wrong. Are we doing a great job? Sadly, no, we're not. But that's what it means. It doesn't make me better because I'm Jewish. It means I have greater responsibilities. That's really where this comes from.
Did God choose us, or did we choose God?
Yes. Well, the joke goes, how odd of God to choose the Jews. Not so odd. The Jews chose God. That's a good play on words. The answer is that God chose us. When Abraham and Sarah, made that incredible decision, which you try to picture the scene. This is totally off subject, but picture the scene at that time. The entire world believes in a certain philosophy, and comes along an old man and is trying to teach the world of something that turns it on its head. No, there's no polytheism. There's only monotheism. There's one God. You gotta be kidding me. Abe, I don't know what you're smoking. Right? But they stuck to their guns. And they taught. At that moment, God said, the entire reason why I created a world so that I would be recognized just became, we're finally going down the right path. Think about it. The first 10 generations of world history, from Adam till
Noah.
Till Noah is 10 generations. What direction did it go?
Down.
It went down. Way past New Orleans. Way past. We're talking way down south, right? The whole mission failed. So what does God do? The time of Noah brings a flood. Starting again. We're starting fresh. How many generations from Noah to Abraham?
10.
Another 10. 10 generations. And it's not looking pretty. It's okay. Abraham and Sarah. That's where it begins to change. And at that point, Hashem makes promises, makes treaties and covenants with Abraham. As long as your children follow the protocols, we got this. But you say, but there are times where we didn't. Does that mean we lost it? No. Because it gets forged for eternity at Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai, when we had an agreement, God spoke to the entire nation and gave us, quote unquote, the Torah, we accepted it unconditionally. At that moment, that bond between God and choosing us to be the representatives to teach the world about godliness, that becomes forevermore. And that can't change. Question.
There were other nations that were offered the Torah, but they refused. Too many laws to follow. No, we couldn't stop.
Something Jews would never say.
But I'm saying there were, other nations were offered, but they, based on what they had to do for the Torah or what was written in the Torah, they said, no, we're not going to stop stealing. We're not going to stop. And so
correct.
The Jews were the ones that
accepted. So that's why I say, ultimately, God chose us, but not without that other piece of where we chose it. And when we stood at Mount Sinai and said, Nase v'nishma, we will do and we will listen. No questions asked. It was a done deal. And that stays. Given that, now we come to this concept. There is a difference between a five-star general and a private first class. We are the generals, and therefore our actions, as they are perceived in the world, are magnified. It makes no sense. The smallest group of people, one of the smallest groups of people, in the smallest piece of land, is disproportionately magnified and intensified in the eyes of the world. It makes no sense. We are front and center. The UN would be out of business without Israel. Because that's all they do. They just condemn Israel day in and day out. It makes no sense unless you understand this concept. Why? Can't they just leave us alone? The answer is no. Because we're the five-star generals. We're supposed to be out there guiding the world. We're supposed to be. That's our mission. That's our responsibility. You've all heard the expression before that the Jews are supposed to be a light unto the nations. That's taken straight out of the book of the prophets. That's our job. That's our mission. So yeah, everything gets magnified. So listen to this. When the Torah, there's two places in the Torah. We've mentioned this. Two places in the Torah where it lays it out and says, if you follow my commandments, there's all the good that will follow. The rains will fall at the right time. And you'll have security in your land. And all the things that we really want. All those blessings. And then usually we close up the book and say, oh, that's so nice. Except there's another whole chapter that says, however, if we don't, if we forsake God, if we turn away and don't follow and using tonight's language, we abrogate our responsibilities. God says, then you're defeating the whole purpose. Then I have to make sure that you stay on track. And if it means that you get a patch and you have to go into timeout, then so be it. And there's stern warnings. But we'll focus on the positive for a moment. One of the expressions that's used, if we do follow, the Torah says, I will make it that you will be Elyon al kol goyei ha'aretz. Elyon, like from the word aliyah. When you get an aliyah, you go up.
Go up.
You go up, exactly. The word aliyah, when a person makes aliyah, that means they move to Israel. They're moving up. That's where the word comes from. So Elyon means to become above, higher. Al kol goyei ha'aretz, over all the nations of the earth. Again, it's not just a reward. Oh, you did my commandments, therefore I'll make you the top dog. No, if you're following the commandments, you're in the position to do it exactly why you're there. It's exactly why you're there. You'll be Elyon. You'll be towards the top. Elyon. Now, hi, come on in. Good to see you. It's wonderful to see you. So exciting. Okay. How do you get to the highest? What's the organ of your body that allows you to reach the absolute highest point?
Toes.
Your toes?
Your branch.
Whoa, it said do that again. Highest point.
Hands.
Your hands.
Your hands.
They just react to the toes.
That may be. Your toes give you a little head start, but this is what it's your hand.
Like last week's lesson with the hands, when we're doing them.
So watch this. I heard this on a lecture a few years back, and I wrote it down because it was like, never heard this before. Let's look at the hand for a moment. This is what we call uniquely human, right? Everybody knows the concept that only human beings have what's called the opposing thumb. Why is it called the opposing thumb? Do you ever wonder about that? Yes, because it can go opposite all the fingers. The only one. The other ones you can try and crisscross as many times as you want. It's the thumb that can oppose each one of them. But look how fascinating God designed our hand. Okay? Those of you back on the TV, right? You look at your hand. It's fascinating. What you have are four fingers that work together and one that is completely separate from the others. Right? The design of your hand has it that these work as pretty much they're in a row, they are together, and your thumb, which gives you all the flexibility, is totally separate from the others. But wait, there's another major difference. The four fingers have how many joints?
Three.
You have your knuckle at the top, knuckle in the middle, and where it connects to the rest of your hand. Three. Your thumb? Only has two.
True.
God didn't design this coincidentally. It didn't just happen. This is a purposeful design, not just for functionality, but it's also a message. There's a great insight that this particular rabbi shared that really blew me away. These four fingers, here's the concept. It's Hanukkah. The song that we sing, Ma'oz Tzor. Ma'oz Tzor. If you've ever taken the time to look at the song, you'll note, if you read the whole thing, there's actually six stanzas. There's six stanzas of that song. You knew that? Yeah, there's six of them. You take out your tzor and you look it up, there are six stanzas. And I'll just cut to the chase. The first is an introduction. The one we sing... Oh, fine. I'll read it to you. Ma'oz Tzor. All right. We're not going to go through each, a million aspects of it. So you should.
Putting on my echo at home right now.
Oh, is it?
I asked Alexa to play Hanukkah song.
There you go. So Ma'oz Tzor. So listen to this. I'll just read the paragraphs and I'll explain. Restore, Almighty Rock of my salvation, to praise you is a delight.
Restore my house of prayer, and there we will bring a thanksgiving offering. When you will have prepared the slaughter for the blaspheming foe, then I shall complete with a song of hymn the dedication of the altar. Simple English. That's not simple English. In our simple English, this is an introductory paragraph of us yearning for the third temple. We want to go back, restore your house of prayer. We want to go back, and we want to have the third and final temple. It'll happen when you've prepared the slaughter for the blaspheming foe, all of the enemies that deny your existence. When they are finally dealt with, then I shall complete with a song of him the dedication of the altar, the Mizbeach. That's a beginning paragraph, okay? Listen carefully. Find a word or a phrase in the next paragraph and tell me what event in Jewish history. Trouble sated my soul when with grief my strength was consumed. They had embittered my life with hardship, with the calf-like kingdom's bondage. But with his, capital H, his great power, he brought forth the treasured ones. Pharaoh's army and all his offspring went down like a stone into the deep.
That's
Passover. That's the Exodus. That's the story of we were enslaved, our lives were embittered, until God, with his great strength, right, took us out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. They were all drowned in the sea. Pharaoh's army is done.
24, 48.
Okay, great. We'll get 48. Okay. So you have introductory paragraph of us yearning to go back. Paragraph two is first event in history, Exodus. Next. To the abode of his holiness he brought me, but there too I had no rest. And an oppressor came and exiled me, for I had served aliens and had drunk benumbing wine. Scarcely had I departed my land when at Babylonia's demise, Zerubbabel came. At the end of 70 years, I was saved.
No.
Okay. The Babylonians, when they came, and what did they do? They destroyed temple number one. The Babylonians came, and that was the historical event. And we were kicked out. We were taken as POWs into Babylonia. You know that. It's harder. The next paragraph. To sever the towering cypress sought the Agagite, son of Hamdasa. But it became a snare and a stumbling block to him, and his arrogance was stilled. The head of the Benjaminite you lifted, and the enemy, his name you blotted out. His numerous progeny, his possessions on the gallows you hanged. That's Haman and the story of Purim, which is the exact story that follows on the heels of the Babylonian exile. Because historically speaking, the Persians, the Medians, they waged a war against the Babylonians. They won, took us under their control, and that's when the story of Haman and King Ahasuerus, at the end of the 70 years from when the first temple is destroyed until the second temple is rebuilt. You're following this pattern, aren't you? What comes next? Easy. Greeks gathered against me then in Hasmonean days. They breached the walls of my towers and they defiled all the oils. And from the one remnant of the flasks, a miracle was wrought for the roses. Men of insight, 8 days established for song and jubilation. That's our story of Hanukkah, which takes place in where? What context? What historical time period? Yes, during Temple 2. Again, they didn't destroy it. We're in the middle of the Temple 2 period. How long does the second temple stand? Total.
450.
Ooh, so close.
I'm not going to say 400.
Between the two. It's 420. The first temple was 410. Second one was 420. After about 250 years into Temple 2 is when the story of Hanukkah takes place. The temple stands for almost 150 years more. And finally, the last paragraph. Bear your holy arm and hasten the end for salvation. Avenge the vengeance of your servant's blood from the wicked nation. For the triumph is too long delayed for us, and there is no end to days of evil. Repel the red one in the nethermost shadow and establish for us the seven shepherds. Well, even if you have no idea what it's talking about, what's the next event in history after Hanukkah? The Romans. Romans come and they destroy temple number two, and that's the exile we are still in. Hence the idea that the days go on and on and on with no end. So think about this. We all sing most, or we're so happy, such a great, uplifting song. It's great. And all it is four tragedies. It almost sounds Shakespearean.
Yeah.
It's the four main exiles that the Jewish people have gone through. Introductory paragraph of yearning to go back. Egypt, just as an aside, Egypt is not considered one of the four. It's considered the root. We were forged as a nation during the Exodus. Only after that, now you go through four periods of four exiles. First, you have the Babylonians, then the Persians / Medians, the Greeks, and then the Romans. That's your six paragraphs. All of a sudden, everybody doesn't want to dance for Moses. But here's what this rabbi said. Your hand has four. The four fingers represent these four exiles of the nations that oppose us. The thumb is us, the ones that are separate. We're not exactly like them. We're separate. But here, look at this. The ones that have three joints is because in their world, there's a God, there's an intermediary, call it whatever you want. It could be Buddha, it could be Jesus, it could be Muhammad. There's an intermediary, and then there's the nation. There's three. In fact, we know from the story of the Exodus, in the story of Passover, when it says that the Jews left and they get to the sea, what does it say? The Torah says that they look behind and they saw Pharaoh and the army coming, but it says it in the singular. Saw him coming, talking about the whole nation. Rashi is bothered by that. Rashi, the commentator, says that what they saw was the angel of Egypt was still pursuing them. Because the way it's set up, the way God set it up, is that there is an intermediary. God has a messenger, call it an angel, an archangel of Egypt, an archangel of Persia, an archangel of... I'll give you another example. Jacob, he wrestles with an angel. Remember that? Who's he wrestling with? Who is this angel?
Esau.
What do you mean Esau's angel? What do you mean Esau has an angel and I don't? That's unfair. We don't.
You don't?
I mean, no. Yes, but no. That's exactly the point. Everyone on this side, the four fingers, have a middle person, middle messenger, an angel, a person, whatever, that separates between God and the person, or God and the nation. The Jews, there's only two joints. There's only two. God and us. Nothing in the middle.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up. Come on, Jews hate to pay. We hate to pay retail. You laugh, but I believe that is the source. Jews pay wholesale. We don't pay retail. No way. Because we don't go with any middleman. We go straight to the owner, straight to the source. So think about your hand for a moment.
So, Mom,
you have the four nations that are oppressing or gives us the exile. We have to stay apart. But watch. When you do it that way, which are the fingers that are at the top? It's the four. Your thumb is all the way down. We're just a lowly... Because we're not doing what we're supposed to. If we do what we're supposed to, which means we set the example and we teach the world and we bring the whole world to a recognition of God, watch what happens. Close your hand and have your thumb bring them together. What's on top now? Thumbs. The thumb. If we don't do our job and we let this be, then we're down here. But if we can bring it all together, bring it as one, a world recognition of doing our part, of setting the example, then yeah, Elyon, we can be top to set the example of what it's supposed to be. This is what this particular rabbi, who I heard this class from, and it really struck a chord with me. Because this idea of Elyon, reaching the top, is with your hand. Right? You can jump all you want with your toes, but it's the hand that can reach the very top. Right? I don't think it's true. I don't think it's true, but I find it very interesting that the symbol that has now become the catchphrase after the Holocaust
right? They put out their hand and never again. You ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not this. It's this. It's closed. I don't know. I don't think they thought it through, but I find it fascinating that that's the symbol. The hand raised in doing what we're supposed to be. And the thumb is at the top. Interesting observation. One of the most important lessons that we have to look at in terms of Hanukkah. We said this early on. What did the Greeks want from us? They wanted us to assimilate to a point of where there's no distinction. That's what they were after. And if we buy into that custom, we buy into that system of where we're all one and the same, then we're missing the whole point of it. There has to be a separation. Again, I don't mean it in a negative way, but there is a difference. You had a question.
I was just observing when you said it's like this, the thing is like this, not this. This is was Hitler.
That's true. That's true. Didn't think about that. The Heil Hitler is the bad sign. Interesting. Interesting. I don't know if that's where the source of it is, but it's very interesting. It's this versus this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the suggestion was. And I think, again, maybe I'm going too far out on a limb. The fact that Hanukkah is always around the time of another holiday, and there's a conflict. People feel very conflicted about it. I'm not saying yay, I'm not saying nay, but it's just interesting that perhaps it comes out this way to remind us that we're not. Hanukkah is not just a glory or the Jewish version of Christmas. That's not what Hanukkah is. Hanukkah is its own holiday that has its message, and that is about the attempt for us to become so assimilated. Do you know that the Greek, during that time, it's during this exile, it's the only one in Jewish history that has a unique title of Jews who assimilated into Greek culture. They're called Mityavne. In English, they're called Hellenists. The Hellenists were the Jews who took on Greek culture and became assimilated as Jews. You don't find that there's any term for when the Jews assimilated in Babylonia or the Jews assimilated in Rome. It doesn't exist. There's no such term. Because the entire philosophy of the Greek push was to get us to be un-Jewish. You can have a temple, they said. We didn't destroy it. But I can go in, you can go in, everyone, it's all open to everybody. And we can come to your temple and you can come to our temple. There's plenty of books of philosophy. There's Socrates, there's Aristotle, and there's a Torah, and there's just one of many gods. And we're all one and the same. We celebrate Hanukkah and we light this little candle. A little candle. You say, what could a little candle do? Turn out the lights. You know what a little candle can do. In a world where there's darkness, right? There's darkness. Darkness can mean many things. It could mean trouble. It could mean difficulties and challenges. It could also be when we're lost. It could be broad daylight, but you're lost. You're in the dark. We even use that expression in English. If you don't understand it, right? You have no idea what the person's talking about. You say, I'm in the dark. I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm completely lost. Comes along a little candle and tries to shed light. That's what Hanukkah is. Hanukkah is that opportunity to look at that little candle and say, what's that little light teaching? I had a friend told me this story. He said that he knew of somebody who went over to the dean of the yeshiva, the Rosh HaYeshiva, the head of the yeshiva, top billing, the most scholarly in the yeshiva, well seasoned and just... went over, this young boy went over to the young man, and he said, Rabbi, I just want you to know, I went through the entire Talmud, which is a monumental work, monumental. Even if, as I've mentioned before, the idea of Daf Yomi, of learning a page of Talmud a day, even if you did that, one page a day, it would still take you 7.5 years. So imagine if you really put in the time and study it and analyze it. So this guy did it. He went over to his rabbi, the Rosh. He went over to the head and he said, Rabbi, I just want to let you know that I went through the whole Talmud. And the rabbi's response was, somewhat lukewarm.
Very surprised. The boy, you know, the young man was surprised. This was huge.
And so he thought maybe he didn't hear. He thought maybe he did one of the books. He said, no. I went through the whole Talmud from beginning to end. And again, the rabbi's response was, okay. Very surprising. So he said, Rebbe, I don't understand. Why aren't you so excited? I mean, this I thought was a big deal. He said, it is a big deal. It really is. But you keep saying that you went through the Talmud. But I've been watching you. I've been seeing you. You may have gone through the Talmud, but it's clear the Talmud didn't go through you. Ouch. Ouch. That's what I'm looking at. When I see the candles burn, I'm looking at the flame, but is the flame doing anything for me? What am I, in practical terms, am I just doing a checklist and said, okay, I lit my menorah, I got my mitzvah, I'm good to go? Or do I take the extra 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and think about it? What's a message for me? What am I going to do practically? Don't we all face the same challenge today? Don't we? We face a challenge of how do we remain active in our Jewishness? Whatever it is, whether it's synagogue, studying, praying, something. But we face the challenge out there because the world says, let's all be together. And again, I got no issue with doing things as with diversity, and not at the cost of my giving up my Jewishness. Hanukkah is the holiday of Jewish pride. And that's what it has to teach us. Look at those candles and say, what am I taking? What's the little flame that's keeping me burning, keeping my Judaism? That's the message that I wanted to share. And just every time you look at your hand, remember the symbolism. This is what it's about. A thought. Any questions? Robin, you always have notes on something.
Tonight I wasn't doing notes, but I'm watching. We're trying to see about the candle.
Yeah, which one won?
That's why there's always like a little.
Looks like the number two has still got a chance, right?
They all are there.
No, this one's out. Yellow's out.
Okay, so mine's there. Yeah.
Any questions of people here? No questions?
No questions.
Do you ever think about that? The hand like that?
No.
Tell you who makes this stuff.
That's a blessing. That's a new one.
That's wild. You know, when I belong to an online group known as Senior Connections. And so they were all talking about the holidays, and they turned to me because I said a few things about Judaism. And they said, well, Fred, what? Because they said the holidays were always the toughest. You know, and they said, what about you, Fred? What about your holiday? I said, well, Hanukkah is really, you know, the kids. They said, it's not like Christmas. I said, it's a whole different holiday. I said, they said, well, what do you have that would be like Christmas? And I said, Probably Passover, because the whole family gets together. He said, because they're talking about the whole family getting together. Well, the whole family doesn't get together for Hanukkah. The kids are around, they come over. But Passover, you know, I think I shocked them because they always thought Hanukkah was the Jewish Christmas. Right. I mean, I've actually heard some. A very close friend of mine once gave me a little ornament. They said, well, you do have a Hanukkah bush, don't you?
Right.
I looked at them. They said, it's not real. I said, well, maybe some people might have one, but I've never had one.
Right. That is correct. That is correct. And it's a common misconception.
So I'm doing my part with the 22,000 people that are members of Senior Connection.
Wow. Rabbi,
you mentioned earlier that
did you choose the
Jacob?
You chose
not the angel when you said who's the angel? We don't have angels.
We don't.
No, Esau did. Esau doesn't have one lot. Now, I don't want to say that there's no angels that we have connections with. We do. We have Michael and Uriel. I mean, there are God's angel, Gabriel, but they're not assigned to say that's the agent overseeing the Jewish people. There is no angel that is dedicated as the archangel of the Jewish people. There is none, because it's God.
We pray directly.
That's correct.
I know the Catholics have
it's intermediary. That's correct. Again, I understand where they're coming from, because the thought
yeah.
a human being have a direct relationship, a finite being having a relationship directly with the infinite being seems like, you know, a Mac and a PC. They just don't talk to each other, right? I understand the philosophy where it comes from, but Judaism says, nevertheless, it's doable. And that's exactly what it is. Don't use an intermediary. That is, I mean, again, we can go on for who knows how long here. What were the Jewish people thinking when they built the golden calf? That's really what it was. There was a certain fear. They thought Moses was gone. In their minds, Moses was that player. And now Moses is gone. We can't be direct. We can't have a direct. We need something, someone, something. That's where it came from. It wasn't coming as a direct rejection of God. That was a small handful of the Jews. Why do I say that? Because it says that all the Jews, the women did not, by the way, kudos all of you, the women did not participate in it, okay? But how many Jews? So the Torah says they took a census. There were over 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, right? How many of them served? Almost all of them. Almost all of them. Leave the tribe of Levi out for a moment. So 11 of the 12 tribes, men, were all involved. So even if you want to say of the 600,000, only 550,000 of them served the idol, why only 3,000 died? 3,000 were punished. A plague came through and 3,000 were killed.
Because of their belief of what half represented.
Correct. The 3,000 believed it was a replacement, a substitute for God. That's out. That's 3,000. That's off. The rest, 500, I'm just making up a number. I don't know what the real number is, right? But the vast, overwhelming majority weren't replacing God.
Replacing
Moses because they felt unworthy to have a direct relationship. So they needed something to act as the intermediary. And that's why God is so ticked off. That's what makes our relationship different. You don't have and you don't need anything in the middle. It's us and him, us and God, period.
So, Rabbi, are you saying that God set up for the other nations an angel for them?
Correct.
So the angels for the angels for the other nations, that was all set up by God.
Correct.
And he did not do that for us because we didn't need it.
Correct.
So,
but that doesn't mean they should pray to the angel. They should also pray to God. But practically speaking, just, you know, I'll utter a prayer. How does the prayer get to God? How does it get there?
Be yourself.
But how does that really work? You're right. That's an expression from God, from your mouth to God's ears. In practical terms, how does it work? Is God right next to me, and every time I pray, he's like, let me go to you. Is that what happens? No, that's not what happens. Prayers are brought to God. That is true. There are angels whose job it is to take prayers and bring it before God. But whom are we praying to? God. That's the difference. Not to so-and-so to bring my prayer there. I'm praying for you to do that. No. This is a big, big, big mistake. When a person goes to a cemetery, right? And you utter a prayer in front of the deceased that's buried there, right? Do not direct your prayer to the deceased. That is not what we do. We don't pray to any human being, alive or dead. You can say a prayer to God that it should be answered in the merit of this righteous.
Do you ever feel any different when you pray?
There's a world of difference.
Well, you go through another
right? You okay there? We're good? You can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not praying to an individual. I don't care if it's a human or an angel or some symbol. It doesn't matter. That is part and parcel of the second of the Ten Commandments. Do not have any other gods before me. Gods doesn't only have to be a superpower. It's anything that you ascribe that has power. That, oh, I'm going to turn to you. In the old days, who did they pray to?
The average non-Jew. What do they pray to?
The sun god.
The sun god. Why? Why did they pick the sun? Why? So what?
It brought life.
Thank you. Because in the mind, right, this was the mechanism by which their crops would grow. The sun, the clouds, the rain, and they did the rain dance, right? Because in their minds, that's what we need to turn to, forgetting that that's just an agent, right? For the owner. You go to the owner. You want to get a good deal. Prices tomorrow, right? You know, and you're like, oh, that's exactly what I'm looking for, right? And you go up to the cashier and you say, this is what I want to buy. You think wasting my time. Why am I wasting my time? Because the cashier is just, well, that's the bottom of the chain. That's the, you know, that's the one who has to just do it. But who do I have to go to if I want to get a discount? That's what it is. When we pray, who am I going to go to? The intermediary who's going to? No. That's just a conveyor belt. That's all it is. The angel who's dedicated, their job is to take my prayer and bring it up. Take your prayer and bring it before God. That's not addressed. You don't write to Mr. Angel. Please bring my prayers before God. Don't ever do that. Do you know? Okay, you're totally pushing my buttons now. Okay, one of the famous songs that we sing Friday night.
I have a question.
We sit around, we come home from shul. Before we make kiddush, what song do we sing? Shalom Aleichem. Okay, translate. Shalom Aleichem. Welcome. To whom?
The angels.
The angels. Angels. We're welcoming angels. Whoa. Okay. We live with that. We believe in angels. So we welcome them to our home. Next paragraph.
To you.
Come in peace, abide.
Boachem. I said the administrating angel.
Come, it's wonderful to have you. Third paragraph.
Abide in peace and depart in peace.
No, that's the fourth. The third one.
Bless
me in peace. Barchuni l'shalom. That was a major controversy when that song was composed and brought about, because it touches on this topic. There were certain rabbis that came out vehement against this. Angel. You're turning to an angel and saying, angel, give me a blessing? Angels have no power to do such a thing. The only one who can give a blessing is God. You're going to phrase it in such a way, bless me, angel? That's heresy. That's idolatry. They were vehemently opposed to it. To which then the answer, we all do it, right? I don't know about you, but I do it, right? The answer is that we're not turning to the angel. The real intent behind that paragraph is, angel, on behalf of your mission of God, you've come to my house. That's why you're there. Why are you here? Because you want to convey God's blessing here in the house. But you're not the source of the blessing. You have no independent power outside of God. But that's what was stuck in their craw. You're going to phrase it in such a way that they have, we don't believe in such a thing. Nothing, no human, no angel, nothing can act as an independent source. Even the fact, the second of the Ten Commandments, is that don't have any other God. You know what the word that's used in the Hebrew? Lo yiyah Elohim acherim. Lo yiyah lecha. There should not be for you Elohim acherim, other gods. How silly can you be? Why would you use the exact word which means God with a capital G to mean don't have any other gods with a lowercase g? It's the same word in Hebrew. Why would God choose the word that says his name, which is the only one, don't have any other ones like that? Another word. Come up with a word for idols. Come up for a word, intermediaries. Come up with another. Why use the exact same word? You hear my question? Strange. Who wrote this book? No, right? The answer is because the word Elohim does not mean God. It's not what the word means. Elohim means power. The one of authority. Where do I know that from? Because keep reading the Torah. When it talks about when there's a conflict amongst people and you have to come before the court, the judges, the Torah uses that word again. You come before Elohim. And it doesn't mean God there. It means the judges. It means those who have a source of power and authority. Says God in the second of the Ten Commandments, don't have any, forget the word gods, don't have anything that you ascribe an independent power to. That's what you're not allowed to have. Whether it's an angel or a human. It could be. That's become the new God.
What?
In God we trust. Mr. Ben Franklin.
That's making sense. Well, I always wondered about the plurality of that.
There you go. There you go. Because it means any source of independent, quote unquote, power. Don't have such a thing. It's exactly what the Torah says. Come before Elohim to get the case adjudicated. That's what it is. That's what the word Elohim. Now, obviously, Elohim in the context, why it means God is because, that is the independent source of everything. But it doesn't mean God. It's a word describing God's characteristic of being the source of power. That's really what it means. Yes, Fred.
The English translation on what I had thought was the third prayer of the Shema.
Yeah.
Okay. The one that appears first, which starts with
the Ahavta.
Well, in English, it's where you use the four from the four corners of the earth,
yes.
But there's a line in there that just struck me because I've never seen that in any prayer before with English. And who else? Who can come to you and say, "What are you doing?" It's where it says, "There, you are God." There is no other God. There is no God but you. But then a little later down, it says something. I wish I had it in front of me. I could read it better. But I say it every morning. I should remember. I haven't memorized it. So basically, it says, who can of all the people above the earth, above below the sea, above the earth, who can say to you, what are you? What are you doing? And I thought that's an interesting. Yes. Phraseology. I've never seen that. So many prayers repeat themselves. And that's
true is our King, there is nothing beside him, as it is written in his Torah. You are to know this day and take to your heart that Hashem is the only God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is none other. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you're translating from the Hebrew, aren't you?
The
English?
I'm not that. I can make it up that fast. I think in English, but.
Hold on. It's right where the.
While you look for that,
yeah.
Let's do this.
Please,
unless you guys don't want to play a game.
Once the Greeks were defeated, then Rome never came up and enforced or viewed the assimilation as important as the Greeks.
Correct. Now, the Romans, it was an extension of Greek culture. There is some nuance. Not nuance. There is some difference between it, and it really was taking the Greeks to another level. But fascinating when it comes to Rome and what they did. It really has been three eras since the destruction of the Second Temple. It really has gone through three different phases. You have the first phase of when they came and destroyed the temple. Fast forward, you have times of where. So that's. Not a destruction necessarily of the physical, annihilating the physical Jew. That was just getting rid of that spirituality that they weren't in favor of, right? Similar to the Babylonians, okay? But then you have the Crusades. Then you have, all the, Spanish Inquisition, right? That's all about, if you're not going to do it our way, you have to give up your life, physical. That corresponds similar to the Purim story. What you'll see is Rome corresponds to the first three, really. The first phase of Rome matches Babylonians. Second phase of the Romans really matches the Purim story and the Persians. And then you have the third, which is like the Greek, which is all about rational science, thinking it through, philosophical idea. That's what we live in now. It goes through all three phases. Rome really is the amalgamation of all three, which is why it's lasted this long, which is the last one. Because once you defeat this, this is the totality of all of the foes. That's one and done. And then we've finished once and for all. Yes? No?
I think for old time's sake, you should just freeze for a minute.
Ouch.
I was going to say, Michelle, you had the third candle, right?
I did.
But you won. That one went out right. But you won. Hey, get
okay, we'll do a quick round of trivia. Again, this is a wheel that it has six options. Kanaka trivia, Jewish customs, State of Israel, Jewish history, Torah trivia, Stump the Rabbi.
Jewish customs.
If you stump the rabbi, you get twice. You get double. All right. Greg's going to go first. Give it a good spin. Jewish customs. Okay. Jewish customs. I got probably like 500 questions. But here. All right.
Is this just for us to answer?
Just for you. Oh my goodness. Okay. What is, we have the custom of lighting candles for Shabbos, not only for Hanukkah, but for Shabbos as well. What are the minimum number of candles that need to be lit for Shabbos?
Two.
Two.
19 fingers.
Oh, wait, we're going to call, you can call for
us. Here's
one.
No.
No, Michelle says one. So here we have our first disagreement, our first argument.
We need a lifeline.
We need a lifeline. Yeah. Two. Why do you say two?
You did.
Why do you say two?
Because that's what my mother.
Do you put butter on a burn?
Did.
Yeah, your mom did, I'm sure. Don't do that anymore. No, don't do that.
My grandmother did.
Hurry up. Don't grow up with that guy. Don't do that. Always two. I'm saying one. What do you think, Brad?
Two.
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 Two. Two.
I think one also.
Candlesticks.
A pair of candlesticks.
We think one.
What do you say, you go with them.
No, I think
no?
Two.
Two.
One. We don't know.
Rabbi, I think one also.
The correct answer is two. The correct answer is two. And Monroe said it is because when it comes to Shabbos, the Torah has, right? We know that the Ten Commandments are repeated in two different places in the Torah. Is it repeated? But there's two places in the Torah with the Ten Commandments. The first time it uses the word to remember the Shabbos day. Remember, and the second version has it as observe or guard. Two, Zachar and Shamar. In commemoration of both aspects, to remember are all the positive commandments related to Shabbos. Guard and protect and observe is to refrain from all the negative, the negative commandments. For both, we have two
candles. So we got it right. We got it right. I thought.
For Shabbat, you must have two. But nope. I found it.
Okay.
So, Rabbi, I believe when Andrea, years ago, she's 36 now, when she got married, someone gave her one candlestick. And I thought, what is that? Why do you have one? The other
two.
We were told, no, this was a question for
can't hear.
Nice, but the minimum is really two.
It's really two.
Doesn't make it right.
Hanukkah trivia. Hanukkah trivia. All right, here we go. Hanukkah. Hanukkah trivia. You want an easy or hard?
Easy. Hard.
I think I'm hard. Yeah, how many days?
What day is?
Not including, here it goes. Not including the helper candle, the shamash, what's the total number of candles that we light over the course of the 8 days?
I don't mean that.
Wow.
Don't help them.
It's going to be 44 minus 8. So what is it?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
32.
Candles in the box. Exactly. So it's 24 minus the 8 chunks.
How many candles are in the box?
They say 36. Is that your final answer?
That is.
See? You can do whatever Michelle says. You made it past the 50
mark. Yeah.
I'll go with it. I don't want
You'll to go with it. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Agree. The correct answer is 36. You know why?
Because it's on the box.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's with the box. Do you ever wonder about that? Like, come on, seriously. You may have a box of exactly 44 candles.
Yeah,
but so random.
You don't get second.
You know why there's 36? First of all, the reason why you have the helper candle is not required. I'm being careful.
18 is 36.
Do it. Light is shamash, and that's true. But from a purely technical, halachic standpoint, you don't need it. The only reason you have it is because you're not allowed to derive benefit from the candles. So if the lights go out and you don't have the shamash, you don't have the helper candles, the only light in your room is the ones from the Hanukkah itself. You can't get benefit from it. So we add the helper candle just in case the lights go out or it gets dark or whatever in the old days, right? You were getting benefit from the helper candle. The fact that the other ones are on, that's really where it comes from.
Of course, you live, so we can go out first.
Okay.
No, it didn't go out first.
Anyway, but why 36?
Yeah,
fascinating concept. You know why, Gary? You're going to love this. You're going to love it.
The division of nine.
Double five?
18. Yeah. The reason is as follows. God, on the first day of creation, created what? Created light.
Mm-hmm.
Light. Right? I'm not making this up.
Let there be light.
Let there be light. What kind of light?
Good
fluorescent? LEDs now?
Sunlight.
Can't be sunlight. Can't be. Because the sun, the moon, the stars are not put up until day four.
So what kind of light?
A spirit.
What?
His spirit.
A spiritual light. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
That's what he always
says to me. More about it, maybe. Maybe, right? How long, the Talmud says that Adam, the first man, was able to use that light, right? Adam was created on which day?
Six day.
The last day of creation, right? Other than Shabbat, 6 day. Mm-hmm. At what hour of the day?
Well,
let's say halfway through. Let's just say halfway through for now. Okay?
He's gonna use
halfway through the day. So Adam is around for 12 hours on Friday, right? 24 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So you have 12 hours of Friday, and then you have 24 hours for Shabbos. It's 36. The Talmud says that Adam was able to use this light, and that's why it is a spiritual light, because he could see from one end of the world to the other. It doesn't mean he was Superman and he had superpowers like that. When the Talmud uses phraseology like that, it's trying to convey a message. When I see something clearly and I can recognize what it is for what it is, that's one end to the other. It's crystal clear. Adam was given the ability to see the purpose and functionality of everything in the world. That's why he was able to give
names
of all the creatures, because he had the ability. He's using that light. We light 36 candles as a commemoration of the 36 hours of the light that existed for clarity, the light of clarity of the world. That's what these 36 candles represent.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Amazing.
Amazing.
I deserve a raise, don't I? Okay. Brett.
The heavens, the earth, the seas, and all that is in them. Who among all your handiwork, those above and those below, can say to you, what are you doing? It's just that phrase all of
you. Humans and angels.
Huh?
Humans and angels.
Yeah.
We are all God's creations.
But it's just the fact that the way it's phrased. In other words,
above and below. Above and below.
Right. Who could say to you, okay, spin it.
Yeah. Torah trivia. Regular Torah trivia, not related to Chanukah.
It won't be Judaism.
Okay. Yeah, it might be something Jewish. This is a hard one.
Oh,
no. Give up for it, so.
What color?
I'm colorblind. Okay, go ahead.
Was the manna?
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm joking.
Kind of beige.
What color?
Beige.
It could taste like anything.
I didn't ask what it tastes like.
Because it looked like anything?
What?
If it could taste like anything, we didn't have the
color. Is that your answer?
Wait. Should it be white?
Any color you wanted it to be,
just like the taste.
Yo, what? Beige, like wheat, like boring food. Beige,
like boring food. Wheat,
yeah, beige,
like matzah.
Yeah.
But your answer is
no.
White. Torah actually says it. You just got to read the words, folks. That's all in there. Really? It's actually white. Okay. Oh, Jared. Some other time. I got to save room for another class.
Colors on the board.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
Stump the rabbi.
There's stump the rabbi, Sharon.
Sharon's got to ask a question.
I got one.
That if I get stumped, she gets 2 points.
Okay, rabbi.
What?
We got one.
You got it. What? You didn't spin yet.
How can I spin it? I'm not there.
Go ahead. You want to ask a stump the rabbi question?
Yes, I do.
All right, here we go. Charles has got a question.
When Moses ascended Mount Sinai, what was the elevation?
What was the elevation of Mount Sinai?
Rabbi Charles.
5,280.
What was the elevation of Mount Sinai?
Can't use your
Mount Sinai.
7,497 feet.
Did you know that, or did they tell you that?
Who told? Did you tell me?
No.
Did anyone here tell me?
No. You Googled it.
Nobody here told.
You Googled it.
Yeah, right.
I used Siri. No idea. All right, Sharon, stump the rabbi.
That was a good one. Sharon was using
okay,
that one.
I have a question somewhere on my phone that I asked you, and you said, I need to look it up because I don't know it and I can't find it.
Don't you remember?
You can think about it.
How many letters are in the Torah?
I'll leave us on.
Yeah.
Hanukkah trivia. Hey, Roz.
Another 15 minutes.
Hanukkah trivia.
Why?
Why do you think we should leave it on?
No, but...
Oh, that's true. The letter Pei, the Hebrew letter Pei, on an Israeli dreidel, replaces which letter on the United States dreidel? The letter Pei on an Israeli dreidel. All right, Al, that's enough out of you. Rod asked the million-dollar question. Why was it different? Sharon, you can get out of your stump the rabbi question and give her the right one. Give her the right answer.
One is Poe is a miracle happened.
There.
Wrong.
No, here.
Versus there.
No, if we're in Israel, Po is.
The letter Pei stands for Po, which means here.
The other one is a miracle happened there. And
we have a shin for Shum. A great miracle happened there. Because we're there. And we're pointing and we're saying a miracle happened there.
We say
so. I see ours have Nun, Gimel, Hey, Shin. In Israel, the dreidels have Nun, Gimel, Hey,
there.
All right. Did you want me to answer, or did
you just
want
to step on me?
Oh,
no, I'm not doing that.
It's
going to
stop.
You're taking out the rabbi.
Israel. State of Israel.
I don't know.
This is
mighty big pickle right now.
State of Israel.
They're still trying to figure out who their leadership is.
We all?
Why? This is more of a geographic location. You know what? Can I tie it into Hanukkah too?
Yeah.
Fabulous. Here's the question. What Israeli city did Matityahu and his sons live in when they waged the war against the Greeks? What city did they come from? What city did Matityahu and his sons live in?
Tel Aviv.
Haifa.
Haifa.
Don't say Tel Aviv.
Haifa.
Good question, Marty.
Goshen?
Goshen? That's a suburb of Egypt.
I know.
No, they didn't live in Goshen.
They lived in Goshen.
Nope. Anybody?
I do. It was near
Jerusalem. We're not looking at what?
It's
not far, but it's not. I mean, where it is today is not. You wouldn't associate it with Jerusalem. Nope.
Yeah.
That's too north.
Haifa.
Nope, too high, too north. Got to come down south a little.
Okay.
Where's the map?
The city of?
Begins with an M.
Yes, it does.
I can't pronounce it, but it begins with an M.
It does start with an M.
Spell it,
Sean.
I can't. I don't.
Modi'in.
Thank you.
Modi'in.
See,
excellent. Good. Very good, Marty.
See?
Modi'in. That's the city, which, by the way, is right near. Not right near the airport.
This is
airport. Right near the Ben Gurion.
Okay, because there's also Lloyd.
Oh, they don't know that anymore. It's called Ben Gurion Airport. All right. Monroe, Gene. Jewish history. Jewish history.
That's
a good one for Monroe. All right, here we go. Jewish history. I won't give you that one. That's too easy. Okay. Easy or hard?
Hard.
Easy.
Okay.
We stumped the rabbi.
He stumped himself. All right, this one's not too terribly hard. When was the first temple built, destroyed, and by whom? Some of that we know.
Yeah, the first one was built.
He just said that earlier.
1000.
Which knuckle is it?
Yeah.
521.
The first temple was built by whom?
Babylon destroyed it.
That's correct. That's an important piece. Many people will say King David, and that is not correct. It was built. He wasn't allowed to build it. That's correct. King David's son, Solomon, is the one who built the temple, the first temple.
Mm.
Again, it stood for
410
years.
420.
Okay, and then next is 420. Very good. Excellent. Well done. Jewish history. Jewish history. Next question. I'll give you an easier one. Which five Arab countries border Israel? Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Jordan, Lebanon.
Look it up on her phone.
Syria.
Jordan.
Right, so we got Jordan, Syria.
Lebanon.
Iraq.
No, not Iraq.
No.
Yeah.
Egypt.
Damascus.
United Arab
Emirates.
That's four. Got one more.
Saudi Arabia.
What's north of Jordan?
Syria.
Iran.
No, he said Syria. Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, and one more.
Iran.
Nope.
Saudi Arabia.
Way out.
Charles, no cheating.
Iraq?
No, it's not Iraq. No. If it was Iraq, the state of Israel would be in the worst trouble. Oh my gosh.
He got busted.
No. What do you got? Come on, folks, one more.
What?
Sharon, which one did we miss? Huh? Which one did we miss?
I don't know.
It sounds Saudi Arabia.
I think it is.
In Saudi Arabia?
I think it is Saudi Arabia. I think it is. All right. Last one. Candy?
Candy.
Over here. Trivia question. And then we got to do these people are waiting so patiently, and then we'll go. And then treats there. Torah trivia, regular Torah trivia, or otherwise known as tea time question in the summer. Oh, this is a good one. How many members of the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Supreme Court, are there? How many members of the Sanhedrin are there?
Did you say Did you say Cyprus?
I didn't say Cyprus.
Is that one of them?
That's the other one? Really?
Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Cyprus.
It's true. That's true. I guess it doesn't border with Saudi Arabia. All right. So how many members of the Sanhedrin?
Seven. I don't know.
18.
Do I hear?
72.
70. Could be an even number. You can have a split decision.
Yeah.
I'll change the question. I'll make it easier. How many members of the Israeli parliament make up the Knesset? Don't ask Siri.
How about 10, one for each finger?
How many?
10, one for each finger.
What?
10, one for each finger.
And that's the
10, one for each finger.
Now, 125.
You got to
have
63
seats, though.
You get a jar.
You have to have one, is it?
I said 12.
How
many judges?
How many judges? Well, somewhere in that area, is that right?
You are definitely, you're very close.
120.
120. Really? 120.
Oh.
120.
That was close.
71. Yeah. Oh. The Anshei Knesset Agdol, the men of the Great Assembly, who were the group of sages, that one of the things that they did is they standardized our prayers, the ones who wrote the Siddur. Right, this the prayers that we have in the Shemona Esrei, right? That was formulated by the men of the Great Assembly, and there were 120, which is the reason why the Knesset, when they formed the Israeli government, they designed it after that, and there's 120 members in the Knesset. That's what it's based
on. Why
is
it 71 for the other
one? 71 was the Supreme Court.
Yeah, why?
By 71?
Yeah.
We'll have to do numbers.
We stumped you.
That was Sharon's question.
70. The real answer is 70. You can't have an even number.
Right.
So it had to be 71. Why 70? 70 is a very famous number in Judaism.
He could say anything and we'd believe him.
Because you have 70 generations from Moses to Sharon Nicola. We can say anything we want. Come on, what's 70? Anything 70 for you?
Seven.
Whole class on it.
7 days of the week.
70 is a lifetime.
Yes.
20.
Well, the average person, they said, would live 70. 80 is considered special. The max. The upper limit is 120. No,
70 people went down.
70 souls went down to Egypt as part of Jacob's family.
Thank you.
That is correct. 70 also the number of root nations of the world. 70 umosa olam, nations of the world. 70 is the number that comprises to a large degree a totality of something. If you want to get a Supreme Court that can look at it from all the different, there's 70 faces of Torah. Torah can be understood in many different ways, obviously more than 70, but the terminology is 70 faces of Torah, because 70 represents totality in that way. So hence you have a group that is 70, you can have it even, so 71. Okay, I think we should give out treats and let everybody go late.
You didn't have the ones behind.
Oh, I didn't do the online one. I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. Okay, princes. We're going to spin for you.
Bring my candy home.
But you got to get it. You got to earn it first. Jewish history.
Oh, great.
Get you.
He's like, oh, I don't know anything but that. Okay. Jewish history. Okay, you ready? This one you know.
Good.
Who was Rashi?
A prophet.
Rashi was the guy who interpreted the prayers and made it so we could understand what they were saying.
When did he live? Give me a time frame.
A long time ago.
That's a good answer.
When did he live? Give me a time frame. A long time ago.
But it's right.
It's not wrong. It's not wrong. Okay. Come on. Anybody know when did Rashi live? That's correct. Correct. He was born in 9, whatever, and he died in 1040, 1060, something like that. That's correct. So Rashi, what was his real name?
Shlomo.
Rashi is an acronym. It's three letters. Resh, Shin, Yud. Rashi stands for Rabbi. Shlomo. Sound like Shlomo. Last name was Yitzchaki. From Yitzchak. Of Shlomo Yitzchaki. However, what Wayne said is true, is that it is impossible to learn almost any part of Torah, whether it's the five books of Moses or the Talmud, you can't do it without Rashi's commentary. Rashi revolutionized the way to learn, and he made it accessible. And therefore, the name Rashi, it's not a real name, but the acronym also stands for Rabban Shel Yisrael, the teacher of all the Jewish people. I went through yeshiva. There is not a single person who studies Talmud who can do it without Rashi. It's impossible. Rashi illuminates everything. They tell a great story about Rashi, Wayne. You'll love this story. They talk about a guy who spent years studying and studying, and he wanted to write a commentary on the Torah. So he spent years, and he came to a publisher, and he said, I'd like to get this published. And the guy said, well, how big is it? He said, it's 20 volumes. He said, 20 volumes? Who's going to buy a commentary that's 20 volumes? You gotta shorten it. Make it smaller. But fine. Spends another 2 years and he gets it down. 10 volumes. That's still too big. Can't. You got to break it down. Fine. Spends another year and he gets it down to 5 books. One on the Genesis and right, one for each of the 5 books of Moses. He gets it down. Goes to the publisher and he says, I want to get this published. He says, I can't publish this. He says, why not? I got it down to just the 5. He says, no, that's plagiarism. That's Rashi's commentary. The brevity by which Rashi was able to capture how to explain it in short is monumental.
That's what you read in the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. Who's up next? All right. Winters, we're going to spin yours. Hanukkah trivia. But you're getting a hard one. No, I'm sorry. No easy for you. We're going to give you a really hard one. Right. How do you spell Hanukkah?
With a C, without.
All right, this is a hard one. It's not even in my paper. We know them as Maccabees, right? The Maccabees. And it comes from a Hebrew word, Maccabi. Even the Israeli Olympics are called the Maccabean Games, right? Not thrilled with it because it's all really about the Greek Olympics. That's where they got it from, but okay. What does this word Maccabi mean?
Ooh,
Stump the winters. Come on, what does Maccabee mean? Sharon, I'll get there. Hold on. I understand. Do you ever hear of Judah Maccabee? You heard of it. You never bothered to ask why he's called that?
Yeah.
Sheesh. What does it mean? Hammer. That's true.
Right.
How would that be the name? That was not their weapon of choice. He didn't walk around with a hammer and say, Home Depot! Why would that be the word that he used? Emblazoned on his shield, he wrote hammer?
You just asked what it meant. You didn't ask why.
No. It's actually an acronym.
An acronym for hammer.
I'm never going to get it.
Maccabee is four Hebrew words. Me, kamocha, ba'elim Hashem. Me, kamocha, ba'elim Hashem. Who is like you, O powerful one, God? How's that for emblazoning that on a shield when you go out there? Is that not the right perspective? Protecting. Maccabee is me, kamocha, ba'elim Hashem. Who is like you, O mighty one God? Now you know that one. All right, who we got? All right, Arlene, Chuck already used three of them, but we'll give you another one. Also, Hanukkah trivia. I'm not giving you an easy one. No, giving you a really, really hard one. You want to give me the answer first? Or you can give you the question?
Yeah, I'll give you the question. You give me the answer.
No,
8 days.
It feels like it.
Which one of
them? All right, here we go. This is, I need the name of the woman. Okay? She is a heroine of the story of Hanukkah. Put your hand down. Mm-hmm. This woman fed cheese and wine to the Greek governor and then killed him. What was her name?
Esther, Sarah. This is what Jewish names we know.
Let's call her up to the Torah.
Anna.
Esther, Sarah, Chana, Bat.
Rachel.
Arlene.
Chuck, that's a different heroine. Come on. What do you say, Candy?
I say we go with Sharon.
Who is it, Sharon?
Judith. Thank you.
Judith. In Hebrew, it's Yehudit. Yehudit or Yehudis. Yeah, that was her name. She was able to, she had invited this governor, the Greek governor, in, and she pretended to really be nice, and she fed him, and sure enough, she fed cheese, got thirsty, gave him wine, fell asleep. I'll give you three guesses what happened next.
Never woke up.
That's correct. Okay, who we got here? Liz. Liz gets the finish. Liz does the final one. All right, Liz.
Good night.
Hey.
No pressure, but if you don't get it right, we have to stay till someone gets it right. No, I'm just kidding. Hanukkah trivia. Oh my gosh, you've heard me speak enough times. I have no, not too many questions left.
So I have a chance then.
You do have a chance. Should we do an easy one?
Yes.
8 days.
Well, yeah, we're going home.
Fine. Mm-hmm. On what day of what Hebrew month does Hanukkah begin? What day of what Hebrew month
does the holiday of Hanukkah begin.
Well, how do you say December in Hebrew?
Oh my gosh.
It's the first day of Hanukkah.
No pressure, Liz.
Is it Tishrei? Is the month Tishrei?
It's not Tishrei.
Yes, Jen.
Like, you think that helps me, Sharon?
The hint they're trying to give you is the name of a city down in Florida.
Carpen Springs.
No, not... Yes, it's a month named after Carl Springs. Come on, Dean. Work with me here.
Tampa.
There's a city down in Florida called Kissimmee. Kissimmee.
Kissimmee.
Ah, whatever.
Kissing me.
Liz, no cheating.
I'm not.
The name of the month is... What's the name of the month? Kislev. Kislev. Okay. Now, okay, no help. You have a 1 in 30 chance. What day of the month of Kislev does the holiday of Hanukkah begin?
The 13th?
The 13th? Nope. Not 13.
18.
What, Arlene?
18 for high.
18? Oh my gosh. That's also wrong.
The 19th. The 19th. Day?
One.
Got 28 more days to go.
What? Come on, Winters, help her out.
I said the 19th.
Well, they work in the office.
We eagerly await your answer. Come on, Sandy.
There's a calendar in the office. Come on.
The first day.
The first? Arlene, it's good there's only 30 days in a month. We will be here until probably next Wednesday. Oh, my Lord.
No.
Come on. What is it, folks?
25th.
The 25th of Kislev. And here's how you remember it. Here's how you remember it. The word Chanukah. The word Chanukah in Hebrew can be broken up into two words. Chanu, they camped. They rested, so to say. Last two letters, Chaf Hei. 25th. Chanukah. Chanu Chaf Hei. They rested in camp from the war. They won on Chaf Hei, the 25th.
Isn't that kind of like...
There is a lot of holidays like this. All right, but I held you long enough. Any questions about what we talked about? Anything?
Okay, no. I'm afraid.
All right. Fabulous. Well, it is really, really. Can we just take a picture? Maybe we can just put it behind the computer.
Yeah.
Let's even do it so that we can get them in. We can get them
what
in.
What's my prize? What's my prize, Rabbi? I did. You got my answer was right.
I'll get you. Don't worry. Here, open wide.
There you go.
Here's an emoji gelt.
That's good. Right.
I expect you at Goldberg's tomorrow.
And this is for the person who got off, because obviously this is what they felt.
I can't use Siri. I'm not one of those like iPhone people.
Let's stand behind here. Yeah. How's that?
That's good.
Nice.
Very nice.
So I don't
feel when I see you.
Everybody's got to be in it.
Okay.
You've got the wheel in front of the camera.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I'm taking a picture here.
Wait, where
okay.
Right behind. Just everybody behind.
Stand in front of here.
I'm going
okay,
back
wait.
In the corner.
Right.
Girls in the front.
Sideways.
Belt lens.
Sideways? No, you don't want me sideways.
There you go.
Thank you, Mom.
Yes.
Never.
All right, here we go. Everybody's in.
I need copy.
Here we go. We got the Zoom also. We're good.
Looking wow.
Fabulous. Everybody looks so good. Excellent. One more. Now let's do one more that I can see if I can do this with a timer. I think I can do this.
Who's going to hold it? You just
no, just throw it up there.
Just throw it. Yeah, I was going to say throw it and run fast. Run.
Timer.
Give it 10 seconds.
Give it plenty of time.
Got a long reach. Do a selfie.
There you go.
You see his backside.
No.
It's a long 10 seconds. Just
no.
That's a long time.
Put it on regular and just flash it.
Lord. All right, let's do the regular way then.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Yeah. I think I got everyone. Oh, here we go.
Wow.
Fabulous. It's wonderful to see you all. Thank you.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Yeah,
happy
Hanukkah.
Bye. Happy
prayer
book.
Hi, Liz.
Thank
hey,
you.
Guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Rabbi. Hey, Winters. Good to see you guys.
Bye.
Roz, you're amazing.
That's what's going on. That's what was going when I left.
Beautiful.
Nice.
That's beautiful.
I put it in the same just to play safe.
Yeah.